Damp with blood. Demodocus leaps after the king. He whines lightly when Callias doesn't move after he nudges him with his nose. My hand shakes as I reach for Callias. But what am I to do? I don't know anything of healing. Help. I should go for help. I stand abruptly, but then I notice a man running toward us. I don't process anything other than the fact that he's holding a semi-automatic handgun, which he returns to a holster on his side and reaches for the rapier at his waist to replace it. The assassin is coming to make sure his mark is dead. I plant my feet before the bench and stare the assassin down. He comes to an abrupt halt before me and points his sword out in front of him.
Out of the way, or I'll run you through.
All I can hear is my breathing in my ears. All I can feel is the rise and fall of my chest. But I don't move an inch to let the man by. My single night of failed boxing comes to mind. Unhelpful. Words are my only ally in this situation. You hit him square in the chest, I say. Now go before the guards come running to investigate the sound of the shot. With his free hand, he shoves me away. I hit the ground hard, but I don't register the pain as I rise to a sitting position, reaching for my boot. The rubies around the hilt of my dagger gleam as I bring the blade down in an arc, sinking it into the man's thigh. He howls and backhands me with the hand not holding his rapier. I go sprawling on the ground again, really hating the bricks that take the skin off my knees. The assassin reaches down for my dagger. With a grunt, he pulls the blade from his skin and tosses it away. His murderous eyes are turned to me now, but before he can take a step in my direction, we both snap our necks toward the dark shape rising from the other side of the bench. Callias is off the ground, standing firmly on 2 feet, swathed in shadows. He walks right through the bench, and as he does so, something metal plinks onto the brick walkway below us. The bullet. Though his clothes still bear the stain of blood, he holds himself without a hunch or anything else to show signs of him being in pain. He takes one glance at me on the ground, at the red outline of a handprint on my cheek, before turning back to the assassin.
You'll die for that,
Callias says, his voice a deep rumble.
It's you who will die today,
the man says, and he steps forward, thrusting the tip of his sword through Callias. The assassin nearly loses his footing when his sword doesn't meet the expected resistance, instead going clean through Callias's shadow form.
What the?
Callias steps right through him, and a shiver goes through me as I remember the smoky sensation of Callias's shadow form all around me. The assassin whirls, facing Callias now that he's on the other side of him. He draws his gun once again, and this time deposits the entire round of bullets into Callias's chest. But of course, they go right through him. He drops the gun as the king pulls his own sword from his side, the shadows disappearing from around the blade and hand that holds it. And then, they duel. Indeed, Callias hadn't lied when he said he knew how to use that blade. He sends out a series of quick thrusts that the assassin deflects just in time. He's slower with the injury I dealt him, but he just manages to evade each one. After a time, I realize Callias is toying with him. Though the two swords meet in the air with metallic clanks, every time the assassin attempts to make his own jabs toward the king, they go right through him. Like he's dueling a ghost. Unkillable. Untouchable. Eventually, the assassin tires of the game. When the swords of the two men come together, he hurls his weight into the connection, sending Callias stumbling backward. Then the man takes off at a run, his steps hitching with the leg I stabbed. Callias runs over to one of the flower beds, bends over the ground, and comes up with my dagger. He barely takes aim before the weapon goes twirling out of his hand. It hits the assassin square in the back. He goes down. Callias whirls on me, bending at the knees on the bricks beside me. His shadows are gone.
Are you hurt?
He asks. I'm fine. But either he doesn't believe me, or he doesn't hear my answer at all, because his gloved hands sweep over me, first touching my cheeks and neck, then sliding down my sides, over my abdomen, down my legs, checking for injuries. But because I have none, my breathing hitches at the contact, and even though his hands are gloved, the heat of them reaches through my pant-clad legs. By the time he finishes, he lets his gaze return to mine, and he freezes at what he sees there. His hands are wrapped around my ankles. They tighten their grip when his eyes latch onto mine, and a rush of heat steals up my spine. His hands move to my knees, spreading them apart so he can settle there. We're close. So close. Too close. Closer than we've ever been before, and—
Sire?
We startle apart at the same time, the two of us not having even heard the sound of the guards approaching. Callias's shadows return in a flash, safely encasing his whole body. 5 men bearing the king's crest on their tunics stand before us, rapiers and pistols drawn. Callias stands and holds out a hand to me, the shadows about the offered limb disappearing as he hauls me to my feet. He releases me once I find my balance.
There was an attacker. I felled him over there.
Callias points, and 3 of the men go in search of the body, while the other 2 begin sweeping the area.
Take the assassin to the dungeons. If he doesn't die from his wounds before then, send for a healer to attend to him. And also send a healer to the queen's suite. Come, Alessandra.
Callias and I walk side by side to the palace. Demodocus leaps over the bench to amble along beside us, the fur about his lips wet from the lapping at the king's blood.
Useless mutt,
Callias says, but he looks down at his dog fondly.
He's a lover, not a fighter. That's for sure.
Touching. So much touching. And heated gazes. And assassins with swords and a gun and—
You were shot, I say, stopping in place. How are you uninjured?
When Callias stops beside me, I reach out a hand to hover over the blood spot on his coat.
If I have time to shift into shadow before an injury kills me, the shadows will heal it.
I thought— I can't even voice aloud what I thought. It's far too terrible.
You placed yourself between the attacker and me.
I did? I hadn't been thinking. I'd just acted.
Thank you, he says, but do not ever put your life on the line for mine. I can heal. You cannot.
He resumes walking, and I stumble to follow him. I can't seem to focus a single thought in my mind. It just replays what happened over and over again.
What did you notice about the attacker?
Callias asks. Notice?
I try to bring his image to mind, thinking everything through.
He was male?
I silently curse myself. Obviously, that hadn't been what Callias meant.
Why am I struggling to remember a person I just saw minutes ago?
He wore dark clothing.
What kind of clothing? Callias prompts.
I wonder for a moment why he bothers to ask me all of this when he saw the attacker for himself as well. But it feels important to answer, so I do. It was made of leather. The hems were lined in furs. It was Pagayan,
an assassin from the kingdom Callias most recently conquered.
The weather is cooler there. That's why the women wear pants. The cold can't climb up their legs.
Good,
Callias says, as though my answer pleases him. We enter the palace, and Callias remains right at my side as we climb a set of stairs. Something niggles at the back of my mind. Something wrong. Something off about the assassin. I spoke with him, I say.
Yes, I heard.
His accent wasn't Pagayan. It was Naxosian.
What does that tell you?
Callias asks. The assassin is from here, but someone wanted to make it look as though the killer was a foreigner. He didn't shoot me, only you. He was supposed to be seen before he got away.
Very good, Callias says.
Why are you praising me like I'm some daft schoolgirl?
You're in shock, Alessandra. I'm trying to keep your mind busy.
I realize then that my hands are shaking. Callias looks down at them as I do. He takes one of my hands within his own, not missing a step.
Callias is like a specter as he moves through the palace, all flickering shadows floating from place to place. Though his feet still make the imitation of steps, I wonder if they need to. It looks as though his feet hardly touch the floor. The potted flowers sitting on tables in the corridors don't rustle as he walks by. The black carpet doesn't indent with his steps. The drapes around the windows don't whisper with movement as he brushes past them. I follow beside him, fascinated by everything about him. From the way the muscles in his back flex as he walks, still visible through the shadows, to the way servants press themselves flush against the walls to let us pass. Everything about him exudes power. We stride down a corridor leading somewhere. I've never been in this part of the palace before. Wait, what was it Callias had ordered to the guard? Something about sending a healer to the queen's suite? A couple floors up, Callias stops in front of a door. A potted ivy plant rests upon each of two tables placed on either side of the doorway, the vines growing up the walls and connecting at the space above the doorway. It's easy to imagine a magical garden lying hidden on the other side. Callias, seeing me stare at the beautiful plants in wonder, says, "My mother loved plants. Roses were her favorite. I'm sure you've noticed them detailing all the woodwork throughout the palace. She'd grow them in her garden and paint them black."
Black? Why?
I breathe. Because then they reminded her of my father. Of the shadows.
Is this?
I start, unable to finish. Callias walks through the solid door, leaving me alone in the dark corridor for a moment. Then I hear a latch clicking, and he opens the now unlocked door from the inside for me. "These were my mother's rooms," he says. Though his hand must have become corporeal to open the door for me, it is already encased in shadow once more as I brush past him. In the greeting chamber, a large table rests, fresh roses blooming in a vase. A grand piano sits against the far wall, and the wall behind me, next to the door I just stepped through. Stained glass covers every inch of it, little pieces of color forming together to make the picture of a flourishing forest. A deer drinks from a flowering lake. Butterflies hover below the leaves of a tree, and everywhere along the bottom, flowers bloom. The door was made to look like the trunk of a large tree, not detracting from the opulence in the least. Candles throughout the room cast the whole magnificence of the design aglow, the inner facets smoldering as though the flames live within the individual glass pieces. The whole palace has been fitted with electricity, but my mother preferred the way the candlelight made the glass shimmer. I still have servants like these. I think she would have liked that. Callias opens another door, which leads into the bedchamber. The bed sits high off the floor, so heaped with downy blankets and plump pillows, I wonder if I'd have to jump to reach into the expansiveness of it. Red bed hangings have been tied to each of the four posts around the bed, and I suspect they perfectly block out the light when let loose. Red rugs cover the black carpet, making each step even softer. The wardrobe is massive, a design of rose thorns cut through the wooden sides. A vanity takes up nearly half the wall, an assortment of jewels and cosmetics heaped upon it. Seeing where my eyes have landed, Callias says, "They belonged to my mother. Use what you will. Anything else you can have the servants remove."
What?
My mind tries to wrap around everything. Assassin, Callias's blood, the queen's rooms.
Why are we here?
These are your new rooms.
What?
I ask again stupidly.
Why?
You saved my life by distracting the assassin and giving me time to heal. And I have never feared so much for your safety. You'll be sleeping right next to me now.
And then he adds, as though it pains him to say it,
"Unless you find that disagreeable." I'm speechless for a moment.
"No," I say at last, my face softening.
No, I'll stay here. And I'd be honored to use your mother's things. Don't have them removed from the room. Though his face doesn't change, I can tell he's pleased, perhaps by the way the shadows about his face lighten. That door at the end of the room leads to the washroom. And this one, he points to a door I hadn't noticed near the bed, leads to my chambers. My throat feels a little tight, and I can't quite think why. Because I'm so pleased? Humbled by this gesture? Perhaps even a little afraid by the intimacy of it? Callias rushes to say, "Also, keeping you in the queen's suite further helps our ruse. You can also barge in on me if you like, as I have so rudely done to you several times." His eyes are still trained on the door leading to his own rooms. "I don't know what to say," I say at last. The large windows set all the finery to near sparkling. The small potted trees in the corners of the room strain toward the light. I feel like a woodland princess. No, not a princess, I amend. A queen. I am in the queen's rooms. "You could say whether or not you like it," Callias offers, "if there's anything displeasing about the accommodations." I smile, turning to him. "I don't find anything displeasing. This is beautiful. Thank you for sharing it with me." "I'm glad," he says. Then he looks down to my hands. I realize they're still shaking. Callias gently pushes on my shoulders to get me in a sitting position atop the bed. He grabs a blanket from an ottoman near the foot of the bed and wraps it around my shoulders. "I'm fine," I insist. "You will be, but it's fine if you're not." "It's not the first time I've seen death, Callias." I wish I could call back the words. I don't need him asking me questions about Hector. "Seeing me kill a guard is far different than watching me kill a man intent on killing us. Your life was in danger."
"Oh, right."
"Why are you so collected?" I ask, glaring up at him. "You're the one who was shot, for God's sake."
"Because I've known for a while that someone is trying to kill me. I've come to expect it."
Callias doesn't leave me until a healer arrives. Some old woman who fusses over me, insisting she look at the red welt on my face. Unsurprisingly, she prescribes rest as a treatment.
"Do you have someone who could stay with you tonight?" the old crone asks.
"Why?"
"After such an encounter, some find it difficult to sleep. Another body in the room might help."
"I am not a small child. I don't need someone to check my closets for monsters."
"Not monsters. Assassins. Men who would use you to get to the king," she remarks unhelpfully.
"Get out," I snap. The healer gathers her things before quitting the room and leaving me in blessed quiet. Chapter 18. I take supper in my new rooms. After the excitement of the day, I have no desire to be around lots of people. Callias doesn't join me, and I assume it must be because he's looking into the man who managed to get into his mother's gardens undetected, and likely killing the man who allowed it to happen. When I am finished with my meal, a maid comes to help me undress.
"I brought your correspondences with me, my lady, in case you wish to respond to any tonight. I'll have the staff move the rest of your belongings up here first thing tomorrow."
She sets two neat piles of letters on the nightstand beside my bed. At the top, I note Orin's love letter and cringe at it distastefully. She lays one of my simpler nightgowns on the bed for me to change into, but I send her away, not needing her help anymore. I ensure the door is securely locked behind her. I check the windows, making sure each one is latched. I look into every nook in the room large enough for an intruder to hide. I turn on every light in the entirety of my rooms before drawing myself a bath and washing away everything that happened today. I dry myself methodically, pull on the simple white nightgown, blow out the candles, and turn off the lights, and climb into the bed. As soon as I do, my heart races, Every shadow in the room feels as though it's concealing an intruder. I try drawing the curtains about the bed, blocking out the rest of the room. Somehow, that only makes it worse. Not being able to see what may or may not be out there.
After such an encounter, some find it difficult to sleep.
Damn the old crone!
Logically, I know there's nothing in the room. I know I'm alone. I know no one can get in without breaking down the door or shattering the glass of a window. But I can't seem to get my body to relax enough for sleep. Tonight, at least, I know I won't rest if I'm alone in the room. I wonder if I could persuade Rhoda or Hestia to join me tonight, but that hardly seems fair to rouse them now. The hour is so very late, I couldn't possibly bother them. A faint sound barely reaches me, and I startle at it, despite its gentility. It was only a soft yip. Demodocus and Callias must have finally returned for the night. Nothing to be worried about. I sit up in bed, pull the curtains away, and stare at the door adjoining our rooms. Before I can think twice about it, I'm up and running for that door like it's the key to my salvation. I knock gently, perhaps too timidly. Could Callias have even heard it? Perhaps I don't want him to hear it. I'm being so ridiculous. Perhaps I should just attempt a few laps about the room to rid myself of the nervous energy and... The door creaks open, suggesting it hasn't been opened in a very long time. Alessandra, Callias says, as if it would be anyone else on the other side of the door knocking for him. His hair is mussed, as though he's been running his hands through it for hours. His shirt is untucked from his pants, all the buttons undone, exposing his smooth chest. I caught him in the middle of undressing, though that didn't seem to matter to him if he still opened the door. I can't sleep, I say. Before he can say or do anything, a furry body pushes its way past Callias's legs and helps himself into my room. Demodocus sticks his nose along the wall, sniffing the new room's interior. Just a moment, Callias says. He leaves the door open while he turns back into his room. Though the room is dark, I see the faint outline of a massive bed, big enough for five to fit comfortably, I should think. I wonder if it's the same bed his father used, or if Callias had it made specifically for himself. What is Callias like when he sleeps? Is he still and quiet with nothing but the movement of his chest up and down to signal he's alive? Or does he toss and turn, let out little snores? Is he encased in shadow in his dreams, or is he solid? His form returns, blocking my view of the bed. He's clad in a long scarlet robe, his gloves returned to his hands, perfectly covered from head to toe, and not a shadow in sight, I notice with some relish. I step aside, allowing him into the room. His eyes find Demodocus sticking his wet nostrils into the wardrobe to inspect the smells found there, the beast having risen on his back legs. Demodocus, down. The dog listens and goes in search of other things to sniff. What troubles you? Callias asks. I return to the bed, sitting on its edge, and he joins me. Nothing, but I can't seem to sleep. We had some excitement today, and the men who let the intruder in have been dealt with. But you're safe, I promise. There are men out in the corridor, and men out in the courtyard, watching the windows. Not that anything could reach us up here, but better more precautions than less. I nod, already having known all of this. I'm next door, should you ever need anything. You're not helpless, Callias says emphatically. You stabbed the assailant with a dagger to the thigh, for God's sake. You're very capable. He places a comforting hand on my thigh. I turn to him. Thank you. I know all of this, truly. I just can't seem to relax. Lie back, he instructs, and I do so, scooting over to the opposite side of the bed so there's room for him. He starts to recline, but his eyes catch on the bedside table to where my letters are piled up. Callias picks up one, and I'm about to thank him not to go snooping through my things, when I realize just what he's holding. My dearest Alessandra, Callias reads aloud,
I hope you will forgive my boldness. But word has reached me that the king did not accompany you to your latest outing at the estate of the Christakoses. I leap forward, trying to snatch the letter from his grip, but Callias stands out of my reach, never ceasing in his reading. In fact, it's rumored you spent the evening with a childhood friend. This has dared me to hope that perhaps you've ended things with His Majesty. You, of course, know of my business travels. They've kept me from your side too long, but I think of you daily. I miss your conversation, your smile, the way you look away from me when you're overcome by my generosity. Who the hell wrote this? Callias' eyes skip to the end to find the signature. Then he barks out a laugh. Orin wrote you a love letter. I stand, trying to rip the damned thing from his hands, but Callias keeps jumping out of reach. When I look at the night sky, I cease to see its beauty. All I can think of is you, your sable hair, and how I long to run my fingers through its links. Your lips, ripest cherries, how I long to taste them. Your fingers are as dainty as butterfly wings, and your eyes have a shine to rival the light of stars. Damn you, Callias, give it here! I throw myself at him, and this time, instead of dancing out of reach, he turns to shadow, along with the letter, which is now safely out of my reach for as long as Callias likes. That is unfair, I say. Callias wipes a shadowed tear of mirth from his eyes. How could you keep this treasure from me? He reads. Your voice could command the world to stop spinning, the plants to stop growing, the wind to cease blowing, the bugs to stop chirping. The king erupts into a fit of laughter. Chirping bugs. In his love letter to you. Callias clenches his stomach with both hands, and in doing so, he loses his grip on the letter. It solidifies instantly, and I snatch it up before it even hits the ground. I tear the damn thing to shreds and let the pieces fall to the floor. Not all men have skill with a pen, I say through gritted teeth. Callias turns toward my stack of letters. Tell me this isn't his first letter. Oh, please say there's more. There isn't, I assure him. A pity. Oh, I haven't laughed that hard in, well, at least a year. Alessandra, are you blushing? No. If my face is heated, it is from the fury I feel toward you. For making fun of Orin? For making fun of me? For thinking it humorous that anyone should want to write me a love letter? Will he never see me as a romantic prospect? Instantly, the joviality disappears from his face, replaced with utter seriousness. Alessandra, I do not tease you. It is only Orin's attempt at poetry that amuses me. You are worthy of all the poet's notice, but that, he points to the shredded pieces on the ground, is not worthy of you. Somewhat appeased, I challenge, and I suppose you could do better? I most certainly could. He looks sadly upon the torn scraps at the floor. Did you have to destroy it? I could have framed it and saved it for whenever I'm having a bad day. Shut your mouth! I return to the bed, staring up at the ceiling. I refuse to let a smile grace my face. But Callias' mirth is so very contagious, and I enjoy his smile more than I care to admit. A large weight joins me on the bed, but since it's half on top of me, I know it isn't Callias. Well, hello there, I say to Demodocus. Callias snaps his fingers and points to the foot of the bed. With a sad, downcast face, Demodocus rises and lies down by my feet instead. Callias claims the spot beside me. He interlaces his fingers over his chest, staring up at the canopy. I haven't done this in a while, Callias says. Lie next to a woman? Climb into my mother's bed. There are several feet between us, but I manage to reach over and clasp a gloved hand in mine. He doesn't pull it away. You don't have to stay with me. I start. Hush. Go to sleep. The interruption brings a smile to my lips. I try to do as he suggests. I really do. But it's been a while since I've had a man in my bed. Sleep is the last thing on my mind. Even if anything else is impossible. And then I remember what happened in the garden. After the attack,
Clias had his hands on me, checking for injuries. But then, things changed. His touch changed. His eyes changed. His breathing changed. I don't consider it an improvement. We almost died. Afterward, he was likely drunk on the energy from such an ordeal, and it made him impassioned. Just what would he have done if the guards hadn't come? I ask. Did the assassin survive? No. Between your wound and mine, he didn't have a chance. Then you weren't able to learn anything from him? Nothing. Save what we already discussed about his clothing and accent. He didn't have anything in his pockets. No note from whoever hired him, nor any money. Whoever sent him was quite careful. I give Callias's hand a gentle squeeze. Then what's to be done? His free hand rises to rest above his head on the pillow. I thought I would have answers by now. Everyone has been questioned again and again regarding the night my parents died. There are too many people unaccounted for. Everyone was terrified when the break-in happened. No one can remember who was in the safe rooms with them, save the person on their immediate right and left. Half my nobles claim to be in places where no one else seems to have seen them. Ampelios has been looking into who might have poisoned my gloves 2 months ago. He's found nothing. And the terrible thing is, I don't know if that's true, or if he's in on it, because he's one of my council members. Now we've had a new attack, which should present us with new leads. But the assassin is dead. His body has no secrets to reveal, and all his accent and clothing suggest is that someone within my court killed my parents and is now trying to kill me, which I already knew. I let my thumb stroke over his as he talks, hoping to silently comfort him. You know, Callias says, his voice dropping a little. I wouldn't blame you if you left. Left? The palace. Being close to me puts you in danger, too. You don't have to stay. I would never force you to remain here.
I turn my neck, but he won't meet my eyes. I'm not going anywhere. You're not facing this alone. Besides, when I'm queen, people will be trying to kill me anyway. Might as well get used to it now. His breath leaves him, as though he'd been holding it while waiting to hear what I would say. We will figure this out together, I say. Callias nods, but I can tell it gives his troubled mind no relief. When I wake, the heat of another body curls into me, suffusing me with warmth. At first, I think to drape an arm over the man, whoever he is, but then I register two things simultaneously. First, I'm dressed. Second, the body next to mine is unusually fuzzy. Demodocus, it would seem, maneuvered his way back to the front of the bed whenever Callias left. He probably went back to his own room as soon as I was out. He can't risk falling asleep in my bed. What if I were to roll over and touch him? I scratch my bed companion behind the ears. Good morning. Demodocus tries to reach my face with his tongue, but I roll over and exit the bed. No slobbery kisses, thank you. When my maid comes to help me in the morning, a manservant also arrives to let Demodocus outside. She brings with her a simple gown, but that is no matter. Today I will begin the preparations for the ball Callias is allowing me to throw. I think I'll set the date for 1 month's time, which means I have much to get ready. Invitations to send out, a theme to select, decorations, food, table arrangements. But I know just the two ladies to enlist for help. A knock sounds at my door as soon as I'm dressed and ready to leave to start the day. Lady Stathos, a man says from the other side as he bows. Lord Vasco, the head of Callias's council. Please do call me Icaros. I don't return the gesture of goodwill. May I come in? He asks, glancing behind me to the queen's greeting chamber. Who does he think he is inviting himself to my room? He most certainly may not come in. And how did he know I was staying here already? He must have a spy close to Callias. Or me. I'm actually on my way out. I pick up my skirts to cross the threshold, then head down the corridor.
A small army of servants passes us by, carrying my belongings into my new rooms. And forgive me, but I haven't particularly enjoyed any of our past conversations. I have a hard time believing this one will be any better. Icarus follows me as I walk away.
I'm so very glad you were there yesterday to assist the king, he says, ignoring everything I just said.
I nearly trip as I come to an abrupt stop in the middle of the corridor.
Assist? Do you mean save his life?
He crosses his arms in front of himself as he pauses with me.
That's a bit of a stretch, don't you think? Considering he wouldn't have been out there in the first place if you hadn't been.
Are you trying to suggest that I had something to do with the attempt on the king's life?
He brushes invisible lint from off his robes.
Not at all. I hardly see what you would have to gain by killing the king. Your prosperous future comes from keeping him alive. Which begs the question. Why do you persist in spending time with my nephew when you are being courted by a king?
I continue walking, not bothering to answer things that are none of his business.
I know you spent an entire night with Leandros doing gods know what. You dance with him at parties. You were seen with him outside shortly before the attack in the gardens.
Are you having me followed?
I lift my skirts as we descend a set of stairs, refusing to look in his direction.
There are eyes everywhere. Nothing you do goes unnoticed. And if you persist in acting like a strumpet,
Vasco, I say rounding on him, showing the utmost disrespect by neglecting his title and refusing to use his first name once he's given me permission, you should be very careful of what you say to me. Right now, the king trusts me more than he does you, and someday I will be his queen. When he comes of age and has no need of you anymore, how hard do you think it will be for me to convince him to rid you from the palace?
Before he can say anything, I continue.
I will spend time with whomever I like. Just because I'm courting the king, it doesn't mean I cannot have friends. Thankfully, your nephew is nothing like you.
Do not follow me from here.
To my back, he says,
Do try to stay focused, Alessandra. The king needs an heir, and if you do not show the proper amount of interest, he may just look elsewhere.
When I'm told not to do something, I only desire to do it more, I say before rounding the corner out of sight. But something bothers me about the council's insistence on an heir from Callias. Wouldn't they know exactly how his powers work? And if so, wouldn't they want him to avoid touching anyone? Unless they are indeed the ones trying to have him killed. I'm beginning to think Callias's fears are perfectly warranted.
Chapter 19.
I stand in the middle of the ballroom and turn in a slow circle. We'll need potted flowers. I want the entire ballroom lined with them. They'll form pathways, just like a flower garden. Epaphras, Callias's appointment keeper, is less than thrilled to be in my employ for the day. Apparently, I got on his bad side when I ignored him and barged into Callias's meeting. But Callias insisted he could keep his meeting straight for one day, so I could have the best of his schedulers taking notes for me. My ball is to have the utmost priority. At first, I thought it strange he would insist when an attempt was just made on his life, but then I realized he doesn't want that attention on himself. He doesn't want his people to think he's in danger, that there's any threat at all to him. He wants things to appear normal.
Why bother with pots? Epaphras asks sarcastically. Why don't we just dump dirt right onto the ballroom floor?
I think it's brilliant, Hestia says. Jewels of the Queen's Garden is a wonderful theme. The ballroom will look splendid once you're done with it.
All the ladies can dress to look like different blossoms, Rhoda adds. Oh, we better commission our seamstresses quickly before they're all booked.
You're at an advantage, I assure them, since I have yet to send out invitations. Epaphras, I will need stationery and penmanship samples, of course. The invitations must go out by this weekend.
Naturally, Epaphras bites out.
Best inform Callias, I am in far greater need of your services than he is. I shall need you for at least the next week, I should think.
The scribe goes pale, and I share a secret smile with Rhoda.
Galen, Rhoda says to the shadow behind her, do contact my seamstress and set up an appointment. Make sure she knows it's urgent.
Of course, my lady.
Epaphras stomps off, muttering something about his skills being wasted as he exits the ballroom. As soon as he's gone, Hestia fairly leaps upon me.
At last we're alone. Now tell me quickly, is it true?
If I'm to answer, I need to first know the question, Hestia, I reply, though she no doubt wishes to discuss the attempt on the king's life.
My lady's maid heard it from her sister, who works as a laundress, who heard it from a gardener, who heard it from—
Dearest, Rhoda interrupts, I don't think we need to know the precise line the news traveled.
Right, Hestia turns to me. Are you staying in the queen's rooms?
I blink.
Oh. Then I offer her a sincere smile.
Yes.
Hestia groans with jealousy.
You are the most fortunate girl in all of the 6 kingdoms. What are they like?
Last night, I bathed in a tub large enough for 3 to fit comfortably. The walls are lined with oils and fragrances. I put fresh rose petals and lavender oils in the water. If I didn't fear drowning, I would have slept in it.
You must make me a list. I need a copy of the labels from all the bottles.
Perhaps I could just—
Every label, she says, cutting me off. I simply must know what brands the queen used.
I thought we already discussed that you smell nice all on your own, Rhoda says, that you don't need to copy everything, that—
This has nothing to do with that. You're telling me you're not the least bit curious whether the queen bathed in lavender oil from Rondo's or Blasio's?
Rhoda thinks a moment. I'll grant you that.
Ha!
Our work done for the day, we see ourselves out of the ballroom. As soon as we hit the main receiving area, I spot a figure entering the palace.
Orin, he's finally back.
Our eyes meet, and a look resembling a wounded animal crosses his face before he turns away from me.
He looks so heartbroken,
Hestia leans over to say. It's not me he's heartbroken over. It's my sister. He's somehow so misguided as to think we're the same person.
He does seem quite daft at times, Rhoda intones. However did the man inherit an earldom?
All of his father's intelligent offspring must not have made it to adulthood, I reply with distaste. I'll meet up with you two later, I add, before steeling myself to talk with Orin.
Lord Eliades,
I call, striding up to him.
I'm doing this for Reuben.
He held up his end of the bargain, and now it's time for me to do mine. I wonder if we might talk in private, perhaps in your rooms?
There's nothing more to say, Lady Stathos. You've made your feelings quite clear.
But perhaps if I could just explain, I try.
That won't be necessary, he says, and heads after his footman,
who carries a trunk of his things up to his room.
Among all his things will be his seal.
I need it if our act is to work.
Orin won't let me into his room directly, so I'll have to find another way.
I have a new plan by the time Callias joins me in the library for dinner, though I've no clue if it will work. Just to be safe, I retrieved the forged letter from Reuben and had Petros fill in the date. With all the players finally in the palace, all we need is that seal.
I'm told you and Lord Eliades had a bit of a disagreement in the greeting hall this afternoon.
As Callias takes his seat, Demodocus lies on the floor next to me, placing his head atop my foot, like a pillow. Yes, well, he was somehow under the impression that he and I were courting, a notion I'm afraid my father encouraged. After our escapades at the lake, Orin wanted to make it very clear that he no longer wishes anything to do with me.
Does your father know of our ruse?
Of course not. He only wanted a backup plan should I not succeed in securing your hand. My father is quite set on achieving an enormous bride price for me. His estate is bankrupt.
Callias blinks. And so he thought to sell you to me?
Is that not how things are done?
Well, yes, but not in such crass terms. Perhaps I should do something about that. I know I will certainly do something about it once I'm queen.
A pause in the conversation allows us both to sample our supper.
Tell me, Kalia says, when it is safe for our charade to be done with, do you not wish to marry and have a family of your own?
Of course I do. Marriage, at least. I'm not certain about children just yet. I want to slap myself as soon as the words are out of my mouth. How does he do that to me? Sometimes I'm convinced we're real friends, and I can be honest. But that is the true charade, isn't it? He is a mark, and I cannot make the mistake of becoming too comfortable with him. If I want to marry the king, I most assuredly should have said I want children. That is the duty of a queen, to bear heirs. Never mind, Callias won't live long enough to produce any.
I feel the same way, Callias says, surprising me. So why don't you have any interest in Orin? I happen to know he is quite rich. The ladies at court seem to think him attractive.
They obviously have never had a conversation with him. Pleased with my answer, Callias turns his attention back to his food. My foot has fallen asleep thanks to Demodocus's significant weight, and his breath warms my other foot. Why do you choose the library for us to dine in? I ask. Do you even like to read? I've never seen you with a book in hand.
My father loved to read. He was an old man. He liked to acquire knowledge. This room not only reminds me of him, it sort of smells like him.
Though Callias has always been quick to speak of his mother, this is the first that he's said anything personal of his father.
I don't have time to read, Callias says, but even if I did, I wouldn't. It's not a hobby of mine. I'd much prefer to run with Demodocus or spend time with you.
Was he the oldest man in history, your father?
No. I have a great-great-grandfather who lived to be 758.
He lasted more than 700 years before taking a wife and having children?
He nods.
How long do you think you will last? I ask.
You doubt my resolve, he asks, switching out courses.
I'm trying to picture you at 700 years old and not having read a whole book. Will both your body and mind stay the same?
I hide my smile behind a drink of wine. Books are not the only way to learn. I will grow smarter and more powerful as my empire spreads, as I discover new strategies in leading my armies, as wise men and women counsel me.
And you will grow lonelier. Don't you think you will forget how to be human if you push away all the mortals in your life?
I'm not even trying to convince him to court me at this point. I'm honestly curious. I haven't pushed you away.
But someday I will die. I will age, and you won't, so long as you live your life in shadow.
Callias jerks away from the food he'd been bringing to his lips, as though that thought had never occurred to him.
Finally, he says,
that is a very long time from now. But he won't meet my gaze.
No matter. That's enough friendly chatter for one night. Time to move on to putting my plan into action for helping Reuben. Callias, I heard a story about you stealing frogs from a lake to put into one of your tutor's beds.
He grins wickedly at the memory. She was a terrible bore.
I size up, Callias.
What? He asks.
I'm wondering, with your ability, is it only inanimate objects you can turn to shadow with a touch?
Demodocus leaves me and goes to sit by his master, finally restoring blood flow to my foot.
Why?
Callias asks.
I have to sneak into someone's rooms for a friend. I wondered if you could let me in through the door, and I do mean through it.
You think I will just help you break into someone's rooms? Someone of my own court?
For me? Yes.
A light dances behind Callias's eyes. Whose rooms?
Orin's.
Do I even want to know what you're planning?
I think it would be far more fun if you watched things play out.
Callias reaches down to pet the top of Demodocus's head. Don't pretend to be above such things with me, I add. I know exactly how much you like slipping into courtiers' rooms, and with all the responsibilities you've been dealing with lately, you could really use a bit of sneaking. His smile shows his teeth. All right, but only because it's Orin, and if you're caught, I will deny having any part of it, for appearance's sake.
And will you berate me in public only to pardon me in private?
Something like that. Now let's be off while everyone is still at dinner downstairs. Callias helps me out of my chair and holds the door to the library open for us. I pause outside. What is it? He asks.
I don't actually know where Orin's rooms are.
I'd be concerned if you did. This way. I follow him down the corridor, up a flight of stairs, down another hallway. He stops before a door that looks just like all the others.
How do you know where his rooms are? I ask.
I know where everyone's rooms are. I like to know where all potential threats come from.
But you keep the most dangerous persons closest to you?
Not at all. He flicks the tip of my nose with a leather-clad finger before grabbing my hand in his. Callias glances down both ends of the hallway, ensuring we're alone.
Then I feel myself disappear. I never noticed how heavy my limbs are until I suddenly can't feel their weight at all. Shadows trail along my skin, curling around my fingers, sliding over the fine hairs on my arms. I clasp Callias' hand more firmly as I'm overcome with the sensation that I'll float away and disappear into the heavens if he doesn't keep me grounded.
You get used to it, he says. Now let's do this.
Callias goes first, leaning his head forward to poke through the door. Confirming it's empty, he then tugs me with him. The sensation of sliding through a solid wall is akin to slicing a knife through soft butter. Very little friction, and almost satisfying in a way. Then we're through. Orin's room is quaint compared to my queenly quarters. The drapes and bedspread are a royal blue with silver embellishments on the hems. As I try to spot the personal touches, I realize there really aren't any. No pictures of family, as some people are possessed to have. No trinkets or baubles. There aren't even any books on the shelves. Perhaps with how often he travels for business, he doesn't bother with such things. But then I forget about my surroundings entirely, as I realize I'm still holding Callias's hand. What would happen, I ask, if we were to touch in this state?
Callias brings his free hand to his lips and tugs off his glove with his teeth.
He brings his fingers to my cheek. I register the contact, and I feel it distantly. But there's no heat, no sensation that comes from touching someone you find attractive. It's rather awful, actually, wanting that contact and not getting it, even with a touch.
I know, he says, reading the look on my face. It's, well, a shadow of what real contact feels like.
He bends over to retrieve the glove he dropped. I'll wait outside and warn you if he comes. Just knock if you need anything.
And then he slides back out into the hallway with a wisp of shadow. I feel my limbs return to normal, watch as the shadows fade away.
That feels much better.
Orin's desk faces the large window in the main room. His quarters consist of a bedroom and a washroom. No greeting room or study, as is in mine. I open the first drawer and find everything I need in one neat place. The seal, wax, and the tools for lighting it. I light the wick and set the wax above it, waiting for it to melt. Since I've never been very patient, I decide to poke through Orin's things. The rest of the drawers on his desk are filled with writing implements and some unfinished letters. Orin has a few chests and a wardrobe. One of the chests is locked. The other holds extra linens. His wardrobe contains nothing but his bland clothing in beiges and whites and browns. I eye the locked chest.
Whatever could be inside you, I whisper to myself.
Nothing else in the room is locked. Not the drawers with his correspondences. Not even the drawer that holds a pouch of Nekos. I test the weight of the locked chest. I can lift it clean off the ground. It's not heavy at all, save for the wood it's made out of. Nor is it terribly large, just a bit wider than my own body. I stand after setting the chest back on the floor and look about the room. If I were Orin, where would I hide the key, assuming he doesn't have it on him? I find myself back at the desk, examining the individual drawers a bit more closely, and I note that one doesn't appear to be as deep as the others. A false bottom, with a bronze key nestled underneath. Eliades, you simple fool. I turn back toward the chest, let out a sigh of relief when the key fits perfectly within the lock, and lift up the lid. There's clothing inside. Rather foul-smelling ones at that. Why the devils would he want to lock this away? First, I pull out a rumpled shirt in shades of brown. A smudge comes away on my own gloves after handling it, and I bemoan the loss of the garment. Then I find a pair of unremarkable trousers. Beneath those are a pair of boots. Orin certainly isn't clever enough for misdirection, so what? And that's when I see the final item in the bottom of the chest. The incriminating one. I hold up the fabric and let it dangle by the fingertips of my already soiled glove. A mask. The mask. Of the bandit. The very same one who robbed Callias and me. I let out a giggle. Oh, Orin. But of course it's Orin, the pious do-gooder who wants to adopt orphans. Of course he would steal from his own class and help the poor. A fool. At first, I think to rush out and show Callias, but then I realize he'll lock Orin away. I can't let that happen just yet. He has a part to play to save Reuben. So I tuck the mask into a pocket of my dress, replace everything else within the chest and lock it, return the key, and finally seal the letter I brought with me before putting all the supplies back in their proper places. Then I knock on the door. Callias reaches a hand through, grabs me, and tugs me back onto the other side. We begin walking. Did everything go according to plan? He asks. Even better. Callias looks me over carefully as we round a corner. I don't recall ever seeing you quite this elated. I'm feeling jealous knowing that Orin is what caused it. Don't be, I say. I just found incriminating evidence in Orin's room. Callias narrows his eyes. Did you put it there? I laugh. No, actually. I came for an entirely different purpose and stumbled upon it. And do I get to know what it is? Yes, but later. I need Orin to do something for me first. Do you trust me? Callias pauses and sizes me up, honestly considering the question. I do, he says at last, as though the words surprise him. He rushes to add, I'm bursting with curiosity, but I'll try to be patient. You are so very good at being patient. I mean the words jokingly, but somehow, I think a bitter note enters my voice. Chapter 20. It's time. Reuben has delivered the letter to Melita. His father, Lord Thoricus, is at court, though reluctantly. Orin is back from his travels, which I now realize had nothing to do with business at all, but were an excuse for his illegal activities as the bandit. I still can hardly believe he has the capability and brain capacity for such deception. But it is of no matter. Orin will be exposed soon enough. Reuben arrives at my rooms at 8:30. She just excused herself from our outing in the gardens, saying she was fatigued and would turn in early tonight. She's taking the bait, Alessandra! Reuben's excitement brings a smile to my lips. What do we do now? I've bribed a servant to follow Orin all day and send me regular letters with his whereabouts. What's next is for me to get him to Melita's rooms. Reuben's legs fidget under his well-tailored pants. How are you going to do that? Everyone's heard of the way he dismissed you in the entrance hall. I toss my hair over my shoulder. By appealing to his better nature. Don't you worry about that. Do you remember your part? Reuben wipes his brow with a handkerchief.
I'll tell my father Melita said she wasn't feeling well. I ask if he would like to accompany me to check on her in her rooms. I need to act as though I'm concerned for my bride-to-be.
He grimaces as he says the words. You can do this, I tell him. But remember, timing is everything. The good news is your father and Melita are staying on the same floor. Still, you must wait until you have Orin and me in your sights.
Reuben lets out a deep breath as he pockets his handkerchief. All right, I'm ready.
Reuben leaves me to retrieve his father, the Viscount of Thoracus, and I put on my best smile before seeking out Orin, a small bouquet of flowers in my hands. The last letter I received said he was turning in to his rooms for the evening. Good thing I now know right where they are. He answers after two knocks. The Earl is still dressed, and his face falls upon seeing me.
Lady Stathos, I don't want to see you.
He starts to close the door in my face. Lord Eliades, please wait a moment, won't you? I have something I need to say.
He stops with the door cracked open, only wide enough for his face to be visible.
I take a deep breath. If this doesn't work, I suppose I could always pull his bandit mask from my pocket and make him do what I need. But something tells me Orin wouldn't make a great actor.
I admire your good deeds greatly, I start, careful not to wince at the outright lie. I've been thinking about my actions of late, and how I hurt you. I wish to change. No one is a more devout follower of the gods, and I can think of no man more righteous than yourself. I hoped you might be willing to help me change my character.
I try for a humble tone, but since I've no idea what that sounds like, I'm not so sure that I can manage it.
I relax as Orin smiles, though faintly.
This is most admirable of you, Alessandra. May I call you Alessandra?
Please do.
The gods are always willing to forgive. It is mortals like myself who need more time to heed their example.
It is I who am in need of an example, I hurry to say. Yours, in fact. Listen, I've always been at odds with Lady Xenicus.
Why? She's so delightful.
If one considers the sourness of a lemon delightful. I wish to do something nice for her, I continue, ignoring his question. I've just learned that she's retired early and is ill. I thought I might take these to her.
I lift up the flowers.
But I am not so sure I have the courage to go alone, not after how terrible I've been to her in the past. Will you accompany me?
You make it so impossible to say no to you.
I beam. Thank you.
I put my arm in his before we take the stairs to the floor below.
Tell me of your latest business trip,
I say as we head down the corridor from Melita's rooms. Orin doesn't even notice Reuben standing outside his father's door as he tells me lies of selling crops and tending to his duties as landlord of various tenants. I nod politely and offer a few appropriate responses.
Reuben immediately knocks on his father's door as we round the corner out of sight.
I hear the faint taps echoing behind us. When Melita's room is finally in sight, I pause with Orin outside of it.
Would you hold these for just a moment?
Orin takes the bouquet without question. Ever the gentleman.
The corridor is far too quiet. Where is Reuben? Perhaps his father is being difficult to coerce out of his room.
Aren't you going to knock? Orin asks as we just stand there.
In just a moment.
Awkward silence fills the space. Orin cocks his head.
What are we waiting for?
Where the hell is Reuben? We cannot go in without knowing he's right behind us. I just need a moment to gather my courage.
Orin nods in understanding.
Doing the right thing is not always easy. And being the bigger person, the first to reach out with kindness, takes great strength of character. You needn't fear, though, Alessandra. Doing the right thing is never the wrong answer.
Orin has an oddly twisted sense of right and wrong.
He lies to me about his business trip. He steals from his peers.
Are those not wrong?
And then I hear it. Soft footsteps on the carpet and the deep baritone of male voices.
Oh, thank the devils.
Thank you, I say. I needed to hear that. However, perhaps you wouldn't mind entering the room first? Maybe I could follow your lead in this instance.
Sympathy alights in his eyes. Of course. He turns and taps 3 times on the door.
Come in,
calls Melita's bright voice from within. Oren lets himself into the room, and I continue walking down the corridor as the voices grow loud behind me.
The poor dear, Reuben's father is saying. Do you suppose we should have the cook send something up?
Best to check on her first, Reuben says. If it's a stomach ache, we don't want to make things worse by sending up food.
Quite right, the Viscount responds.
I round the next corner as I hear the door to the room open.
What the devils? The Viscount booms.
Melita, what are you doing?
There's a sound of shuffling feet.
I don't know what's happening.
That's Oren.
You were kissing my son's fiancée! That's what was happening!
A voice clears.
I'm sorry, Lord Thoracus, Melita says. I didn't mean to disrespect you or your son.
Oh, this is far past disrespectful. How dare you ruin yourself while engaged to my son? What would your father say? This is a horrid scandal, and we will have no part of it. I can't believe you would tell him you were ill so you could-